And welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here in the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. Hi, Sondra, how are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing all right. It has been a week. It has been a whirlwind. I don't know what day it is. I don't know what time it is. I lived in airports for a long time, getting back from Vegas earlier this week, and I still haven't recovered. So, yeah, like I don't even know what's going on. It's been just insane.
Yeah. Well, it's Friday today.
Okay.
It is
excellent.
Friday, so the weekend is soon. Also you can go on, and just for the plugs, you can go to youtube.com/insidetheropes to check out all of our YouTube content from Vegas. When we speak to Eric Bischoff, there's scrums with Cody and Jericho and the Bucks, Sean Spears, interviews with Arn Anderson. There's tons of stuff up there that you can check out. You can also go to Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes, where Sondra and I tackle the Over the Edge 1999 pay-per-view. A new double Yellow Ropes Forever, where we vehemently disagree on a subject that you can listen to. So there's tons to get over there, patreon.com/insidetheropes, and that helps us keep doing all this stuff. So if you want supporters, that is the best way to do it. So this week, I guess, should we start with the crap stuff, which would be WWE TV?
Yeah, we probably should. I mean, we haven't even talked about, like, really our week in Vegas at all, have we?
We've not. So we went to Vegas. We got there on the Thursday. How was your trip? What do you think of Vegas overall and the weekend and any highlights?
Yeah, I mean, the trip itself was awesome. Like, getting there was very smooth and very lovely. And then, I don't know, it was just, I've never been to Vegas before, so I've never seen, like, the glitz and the glamour, and I expected it to be awesome, and it was. Like, it was really cool. It was kind of nice that where we were staying wasn't too far of a walk to Caesar's Palace, where all the convention stuff was. I mean, like, you walk in those places, and they're just humongous, right? Like, there's so much to do, and there's so many shops and cafes, and just everything's really shiny and big and huge and wonderful. And, like, I had a blast. Like, I mean, Double or Nothing was obviously a fantastic show. You can listen to us talk about that over on Patreon. But I had a blast just kind of like hanging around with you and Keith, since you know everybody. It's very weird for me to just be kind of in the background, like, oh, well, I'm on an escalator and Eric Bischoff is right behind us and you know him or whatever. You know, like, that kind of stuff is not normal for me. So it was kind of cool to just like be hanging back and just like kind of taking it all in and experiencing it. And like, one of my favorite things was going around with Keith Elliott Greenberg stayed with us, and he's writing a book on independent wrestling. And so getting to go around with him as he was interviewing certain people at the convention for his book, like talking to Marco and Logan Stunt for a while was really cool. And I got to actually like talk to Awesome Kong and shake her hand, which was amazing. Like, I'm screaming internally as I'm doing this, right? So yeah, I mean, the weekend was just, it was incredible. I think we got some really good stuff for our YouTube channel too, youtube.com/insidetheropes. Yeah, I loved it. Getting back was an absolute nightmare because my 1:40 a.m. flight was delayed to 6 a.m., which meant that I missed a connection, which meant that I was stranded in Denver. And thank you to Jason and Andrea, my lovely, lovely friends, for rescuing me and letting me chill at their house for a while. I was essentially in the process of getting home from like midnight on like early Monday morning to 1 p.m. on Tuesday. So that was less than fun. Frontier Airlines can suck my proverbial left testicle. I hate them. I will never fly with them again. They are the worst. So I don't know. What did you think of Vegas overall?
I mean, I felt bad for you, given that that was the flight we'd booked you. And then the thing was, like, because I, when you were stranded in Denver, like, I'd like looked to see if there's any way that I could get you home sooner. And the only option it was really showing me was the exact option that you were supposed to be on. But it was still said that the one that you were on was on time. And I was like, well, that's not true. So, yeah, I thought Vegas was great. I had a great time. I thought the weekend felt really good. I felt bad for Conrad because he had so much stuff pulled from him. Like, he had, you know, the Taker and Angle stuff. And then he got told he was getting the Tom McGee thing. And then they showed it in the network 2 weeks earlier. But 2 weeks earlier, then the Ric Flair thing happened. So I felt really bad for him. But there was still a lot of people there. There was still a lot of buzz. Double or Nothing was great. I saw that Dave Meltzer gave Cody and Dustin 5 stars in the Observer.
Did he? Which I mean, is... good, because I think it's deserved.
Mm-hmm. I'm sick to death to seeing these boring fucking one-hour matches getting 5 stars. This,
I mean,
match,
I wouldn't call them boring. I think they're amazing, but yes.
So that's subjective. But the point is they're the matches that always get the love. Yeah. Always. Like, you never really see this type of match get the 5-star love. Very rarely. You know, it's usually any WWE match that gets it is like two like very technical workers, and it's a worker match. Or you see it as like a, you know, the ladder match from NXT. It's very rare that you see a guy who's 50 and a guy who has not been known for being Wrestler of the Year who went in and told a story. My God, how good they
are. There's almost a vindication in the sense that Cody Rhodes and Dustin Rhodes have a 5-star match now, right? Like, there's almost a certain vindication in it. Like, you can be a different style of professional wrestler to the typical, like, really technical or really flippy or really whatever, and tell a story and just take a crowd on an incredible journey. Like, I still get misty, like, even thinking about that match. It was incredible.
Well, like, for me, like, I think part of the vindication for fans like me, and there's a lot of us, you know, there's a lot of people who love the New Japan stuff. There's a lot of people who there's a lot of people like me who prefer the kind of story, you know, psychology stuff rather than it being more move-based. And I felt like, thank God we're represented in some way, because it was a 5-star match. It was match of the night. It's match of the year so far for me.
Yeah, same.
And I don't know if it'll be topped. I don't know how you can top it. So, and look, the vindication for Dustin Rhodes is just like tenfold, because they had him as a comedy character, and look what he was able to do in that building. And you can also check out our show on Starcast on Fight TV, where I talked to Dustin for 90 minutes. A lot of people, I'm not saying this, it's not me saying it, but a lot of people said to me afterwards they thought it was the panel of the weekend, that was the best one.
I mean, out of all the Inside the Rope shows that I've gone to, and I know I haven't gone to, like, as many as people who live in the UK, it might be my favorite one. Like, it's up there. It's up there with some of my favorite shows that I've seen you do with various people. So, well, if that says anything.
To still get those kind of compliments is really good, especially doing this, like, 6 years in or 7 years in, whatever it is. But, yeah, so...
I thought Dustin was, like, top form, and he wasn't holding back, and he was very entertaining and engaging the crowd. Like, you almost... You didn't have to do as much as sometimes you do, but not in a way that you were, like, you know, not doing anything, but just, like, you let him go, and he knew how to take the crowd with him on his stories and whatnot. It was really, really good.
He felt comfortable. And, you know, when we did our first show in Birmingham in March, he didn't feel comfortable. He was, like, concerned and kind of, you know, what are we doing? And then once we did
he's very like perfectionist, right? Like,
yeah, well, I think sometimes, like, when we first did it, he thought that it had to be like a stand-up show. That's not what it is. I mean, it can be funny, but yeah, he always busts my balls. He did that on Sunday as well. We'll have some clips up on our YouTube channel, but for the full show, go to Fight TV. They've got the full package, which is like 29 panels for $59.99, which is a really good deal. I think it's like less than $2 a show. So
yeah, you get so much content for that.
It's worth checking out. We went to eat at an Italian restaurant called Batista's.
I really liked that place. I mean, it even says on the sign, like, hole in the wall. It's kind of like a dive restaurant or whatever. But those are kind of my favorite types of places. Like, I preferred it to, I don't know, any of the other places we went. And yeah, I really liked it. It had 2 T's in it, so it wasn't spelled quite the same.
No, so there was no gimmick infringement. I mean, it was a complete dive restaurant, but in a really good way. Like, you ordered your food, because initially I was like, $32 for a chicken parmesan, like, that's expensive. But then the reason it's that expensive is because you get your starter with it, and you get a side, and then you get 2 like jugs of wine with your dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So, I, of course, then ordered a Sprite and made myself a spritzer, because I'm a big old poof. And Sandra drank just whatever was going, because, you know, alcohol problem. So
I just kept the white wine by me. I mean, you and Keith were drinking the red. I figured I had to give the white some love.
I did not drink the red. Red is like my...
I thought you did drink the red.
No, I hate red wine. I can't... Because white wine I mean, so I took a sip of it when it was just the white wine. I was like, oh, this is like the bottom of the barrel white wine.
Oh, it was Franzia.
Because my test like... with white wine is like, if I can take a sip and drink it on its own, it's a good white wine. If it's like vinegar, then it's not good. So like,
well,
just
this wasn't vinegar. It wasn't like oxidized. It was just
well,
low quality.
As someone who does not drink a lot of white wine, it tasted like vinegar. So I got some Sprite, put it in. It was nice. I enjoyed it. What else did we do? So we saw a couple of listeners, Jason and Andrea. They got married. Well, they got engaged. Sorry,
they got engaged
At Starcast. They got engaged during the press conference and weigh-in. Jason was coming up to us beforehand, like talking to us about it, and he was away for like a long time, and she could see him, and in my head I'm going, you need to go back to her because it's very weird that you've walked away for so long. And he looked like he was sweating a little bit, like he looked internally like he was shitting himself, and I was like, you need to get some sort of game face on. So he had a swig of vodka from her stash, and then he did it, and it was lovely. So,
I think it went really, really well. They were both so happy. It was awesome. Like that was really, really cool part of the weekend.
I mean, the good thing for me is if I ever down the line get to a point with Steve Gunn or anyone else, like people would know me well enough that like that is the worst way to propose to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because to do it in front of people, no. It would be like a horrible moment. Because I would say no. But also we bumped into some other listeners, Billy and Cody from LA and Mel, who travels from LA to come and see the shows and hang out with us. We met Austin and Sydney, who were... I did an interview with the Pinned podcast, which is their podcast. And they asked me, like, 10 questions or something. And they were like, okay, that's it. And I was like, if you don't get any more. And I was just kind of fucking with them. And then they asked me to do a jingle for their show. And I think my exact jingle was... Because I was just trying to think of something different. I listen to podcasts while I'm having a sandwich or having a wank. So if you're hungry or horny, listen to the Pin podcast.
Which, I mean, that covers, you know, a lot of bases.
I thought so. So yeah. What else? I'm trying to remember. Lots of people come up and said hi, which is really nice. And then I told this on Patreon, but I'll tell it here just because I know that some people aren't on Patreon. But so this guy like was at the bar at Double or Nothing, and he was like, oh, hey, Kenny, how you doing? We're chatting away. And he had like a belt on him, but I couldn't see what the belt was. I couldn't see it. And he was like, oh, would you mind signing my belt? And I was going, really? But okay, fine, if you want me to sign your belt. So I said, oh, I'll get you over there if you want. And I stood and waited for him. And then he came over and he put the belt, like the back was facing up. So I still didn't know what belt it was. And I saw it was like Kevin Nash's signature. I thought, oh, you know, he's big sexy. I'm medium sexy. I'll just do a signature beside his. And I was like, oh, how do you know me? And he was like, from what culture? And I said, so you know the Fuck Kenny stuff. So I just wrote like, please do not fuck Kenny, Kenny Kiss. The title that he asked me to sign, me, was the IWGP United States Championship.
Didn't we quiz you later? Like, could you name anyone that had held that belt?
I know the current champion, Juice Robinson.
Yep.
I know people that have held it. Cody held it at one point, did he not?
He did.
There you go, that's two. Mm-hmm. Neither of them are Japanese. Did Nakamura have it at some point?
The U.S. championship? I thought that was newer. I'm saying I'm quizzing you. I don't actually know the lineage of
I just said Nakamura
either.
As a hope for a third one. But I know two. Neither of them are Japanese, which really proves the point. But yeah, so there was that. I bumped into the What Culture guys, the Adams and Phil, so I was finally able to tell them face-to-face, I don't hate you. Some people seem to think I do. I hate the company you work for, but I don't hate you.
We kept running into them. They were actually quite lovely.
Yeah, and I'm happy for them that they've got, you know, what they're doing and stuff. And bumped into Jack and Sam from Cultaholic. Sam and Ross got married. Congratulations. Although, technically, I thought Ross was married to Adam when we married them when I was on a crate pretending I was on Titanic drunk one night at 1 a.m. But, you know, memories. So, yeah, it was a good weekend. And then Sandra went home her way and I went home my way. We'll just move on. So
upgraded to first class, like, oh my gosh, took all the good karma in the universe and just got to be on a posh plane, and I was like in between two douchebags who looked at me like sideways every time I moved, because you'd think like because on the second flight, the 6:45 flight that I finally got on at the end of Monday, right, like, oh, I'm in that very front row, like right behind first class, so I have a little bit of extra legroom. That sounds lovely, right? The problem with the extra legroom seat is that I have to keep my bag above me. Like, I can't have access to my bag, which I want to have my computer. I want to have like my chapstick near me on a 3.5 hour flight, that kind of thing. Like, and I can't do that. So, and then I'm between these two guys who are like super posh and like, I don't know what, I think they were together, but like, they didn't indicate that they wanted to sit together because I think one wanted the aisle and one wanted the window. And then, you know, I'm just stuck in the middle of this. And they weren't really talking to each other much, but like, I sat down and I had my bag in front of me because I needed to get something out. He goes, "You need to put that up there." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. Like, I'm getting out my phone so that I can have it." And then, so like, I have to get by him again to like put my bag up in the little compartment thing. And then he goes, "Are you finished?" I was like, this is like hour, what, like 20 into my travels?
And I'm like, you're quite snarky anyway. So I can only imagine how you would be with them at this point. Would they be like, very snarky to you for no reason?
Well, the thing is, though, I'm snarky, but when I get on planes and stuff, I'm the most polite person in the world. Like, I never want to bother anyone. I just want to like sit there and just like, because I want to insulate myself from the world and just not cause a thing. But I just kind of was like, yeah, I'm done now. And then I just like, I put my headphones in and I didn't talk to them the rest of the time. I could barely move because like, it was a whole situation. And that's when I got your text that you're like, "Yeah, I didn't want to tell you, but I got upgraded to first class." And I was like, I'm so sore right now.
Well, I only
the other thing is like, I like, you know, walking through airports and stuff, like my ankle has been really bad. So then like, I was also in a great deal of pain and didn't have my Aleve with me. So I'm just like, Of course, this day. If Jason and Andrea hadn't saved me, I was just like, I'm a nomad. I have no belonging. I am Tom Hanks in Terminal. This is my life. I will die here. Like, that was basically my mindset when Andrea texted and was like, "Do you want us to come get you?" And I was like, "I don't want you to go out of your way." She's like, "We're coming to get you." And I cannot thank them enough. And I got to meet their cat. Well, both of their cats. And they were adorable.
That's amazing. Well, listen, I'm only going to tell this part because some people might want me to say it. But it's also a message. I think people
but I'm see. I'm over it now.
Okay,
I've healed. I'm getting, I mean, someone paid at work yesterday with a Frontier Airlines credit card and I almost lost it. But you know, I think I can't handle the name Frontier right now. It's just
like,
that's
I tried
too much.
I tried tweeting them and they did nothing. I tried to get people
They tweeted back like a while later as I was in the car with Jason and Andrew, and they're like, "Oh, we don't want to disappoint you. Like, what's your confirmation number?" And at that point I was like, "Fuck you, I'm not even responding." Because like, what are they gonna do? I'm not even in the airport anymore.
Yeah. It was so what happened to me was, so it was, I woke up the Monday, and me and Keith were there, and I was just like,
Monday, because you left at like Monday evening and still beat me home.
No, you beat me home by like half an hour.
No, because I went to Bell's first. Oh,
okay.
Got beer.
But what happened was, so I'm notorious, like, I'm still recovering from jet lag because I'm just terrible with jet lag. I can't. Anyway, the whole thing. So it was like Monday, and I was like just dreading this because not only was it going to be the overnight flight for 10 hours, it was then going to be 3 hours on a train when I got back because I was going to Manchester. So I was like, oh, God, this is going to be horrendous. And then I was just like on Virgin's website, and I was like, I wonder how many miles I've got. And then there was like a text, a number you could text and like ask questions. So I just like text this number. I was like, "Hey, here's my flying card number." I just wondered, like, because I was only going to ask for premium. Like, if I just got to premium economy, I was like, "Do I have enough miles?" And the guy was like, "You actually have enough miles to upgrade to first class." And I was like, "What?" And he was like, "Yeah, you'd need to pay the taxes, which were like $126 or something."
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, and I don't know. And I also knew Saunders was stranded. So I text Ollie and I was like, "What should I do?" And he was like, "Do it. Do it. You have to do it." I was like, okay. So I was like, okay, I'll do it. But then I was like partly feeling bad because of the Saunders situation. But then I couldn't do anything. So I was like,
well, I mean, it's not like you have to be miserable because I'm miserable. Like, I'm not that person that I'm like, I am hurting, so everyone must be in pain. Like, I'm happy that you got first class.
Well, so
I
but what happened
was frustrated with where I was.
I get that, and we will never book you Frontier again. But when I got, so I book it, they send me the confirmation text and all that, so it's done, right? I'm all set to go. So I'm like YouTubing what their first class is like just to see, and it was like a flatbed, and I was like, brilliant, this is all good. I get to the airport. So first of all, Keith says, "I'll get the taxi, I'll get the Uber." I was like, okay, great, that's good. We drive to the airport, he gets dropped off first, I get dropped off second. I go into the terminal and they tell me they cannot upgrade me to first class. because the booking was made through Delta and this is Virgin. And I was like, why was I allowed to do it through your customer service? And look, I showed them my app, which said, you know, upper class or whatever. And they were like, and the woman was like, she did not want me to get first class. She was just like, no. And I was like, I need to speak to your manager. And as this is happening, the taxi driver turns up behind me. He was like, you need to pay cash. I was like, what? So Keith hadn't paid it, and it had to be in cash. No. So I had to go to an ATM in the airport and give this guy a $20 bill while I'm waiting to see. Because the thing is, it doesn't really matter. Going to first class or not doesn't really matter. But if you've paid a bit and you think you're getting it and you go and then you get told you're not doing it, it's like the worst. So the manager luckily was like, because I showed him the text exchange. And I was like, look, you guys have done this. It's not my fault that this guy accepted it. So I don't think I should have to be bumped because of that. Mm-hmm. So he ended up making a few calls and fixed it. So I went into the lounge. It was really good. I kept getting vodkas given to me by a woman. Although one point she just came up and gave me a Bacardi. And she was like, they give you Bacardi this time. It wasn't like a question. It was just like, here's Bacardi. So, okay, fine. So,
right.
And then I got on the flight and it's like, this is the message. So what Sandra is going to start doing, I'm going to make her do it. And for the rest of you, fly if you can with one airline and get their card. Just get the card. Because the only, like me flying that way is only, I think I accrued miles on one flight in 2017, one flight in 2018, one flight in 2019, return trips. Mm-hmm. That was enough to go first class on one leg. So you don't think it's going to happen, but if you just sign up and fly that same airline and do it a few times a year, within a couple of years, you will be able to upgrade. So it's
worth it. Want to know the funniest part about that?
Uh-huh.
Is that I signed up for a certain airline's like rewards program because I was going to book through that certain airline, and then remember how the prices went up because we waited a day?
Oh, God.
That was the whole start of everything.
Fucking Frontier Airlines.
And then when I was like sleeping on the couch in O'Hare on Monday night, I was listening to this woman who was like next to me, and she was like in tears on the phone with guess who, Frontier Airlines, because she had bought a ticket and like for some reason, like she had bought a ticket paid with her own credit card because she had to like change from a business thing or whatever. I got the whole conversation as I'm trying to sleep, and like they bumped her from her flight. When she got to the gate, they were just like, nope, your ticket's not good. You can't get on this flight. So then like her husband had to also not get on the flight, obviously. Like he's not going to get on the flight without her and just like leave her stranded in Chicago. So like basically Frontier's the worst. Because this was a completely different situation to mine. And like every phone call I overheard, every like customer service encounter that I heard in my airport travels, like Frontier was the culprit.
They are the dog worst. But like from now on, you know, get a card with somebody. It's worth getting because you never know what you can get going forward. And the thing was, I was on it and I was just going, I know this is a one-time thing, but it's like, it's all, part of it's really good, but then part of it's like, it's the worst thing to do because you'll never experience that joy again.
Right.
Like, it's mad. Like,
if you had used your points, like, how does it work? If you had used your points to upgrade to premium, would you still have more points and you could do premium again?
Yes. But the only reason that didn't happen is because they didn't have anything left in premium.
Oh, so gotcha.
All they had was like two seats in first class. But like, the air stewardess offered to tuck me in. Like, I had my dinner, right? So like, the dinner was like this mad like fancy salmon thing on like a real plate with a real knife and fork, and there was like a chicken linguine thing for dinner, and then like I was just like,
it's a lot
full.
Better than my pretzels.
I know, now I feel bad for even saying it, but. So I was like, I said, look, I did order the dessert, but I'm sure you go to sleep if that's okay. I'm sorry. Like, I didn't want to make it for me or whatever. So she went, that's fine. She was like, I'll take this away. Do you want me to come and set up your bed and tuck you in? I was like, no, I'm okay.
So that was actually going to be my other question. I haven't asked you this. Did you sleep on the plane?
So this is the thing. I slept for 6 of the 10 hours.
Wow. Because you don't sleep on planes ever.
Never, 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 never. And so I watched one film and then I bunkered down for 6 hours, woke up just in time for breakfast, and watched another film when I got there. So, yeah, it was like, I can't recommend it enough. It's really worth doing. Like, for me, I only really would need to do it or want to do it on the way back from America, because that's the one that mm-hmm. fucks me up all the time. And I think had I landed in, like, Edinburgh, or I just had a 1 hour flight after that, I'd have been fine. But the 3 hour train is what fucked me up.
Mm.
But then I think I'd have been even worse if I had if I'd just gone in the regular one. But I got home at like 5, and then I ended up I think I napped for a minute and then I woke up, and then that was because I napped, that was it, game over. So and then, like, last night I went to bed at midnight and I woke up at noon today, which is
I wish I had that luxury, but I've had funeral obligations all week in addition to work, in addition to trying to catch up on podcasts. So, like, I'm kind of a shell of a human right now.
I
I'm
always
really
feel
looking
really
forward
bad
to
that, like,
Sunday.
when someone dies, it has to take up your time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because I think if I died, I would just be like, don't, none of my people should have to sort it out. Just like, I don't care. Put me in a box or something. Just, you know, have a party at 5 p.m. one day. I don't want people
It's
to
a lot.
I don't want
I
people
mean,
to
it's
have to get
about
up for
like
me.
hanging out with family and seeing them, and that's nice. And they're, you know, I say I don't ever see them. I see the side of the family fairly regularly, like at funerals. It's gotten to the point where I'm like comparing, oh, I don't really like the water at this funeral home, but they do have cookies and they did have good coffee accessibility. So,
I
you
love
know, like that's a
that. I
bonus.
love that you treat funerals like I treat airlines,
Yeah.
comparing what goes
I
on.
felt like, honestly, when I was at the funeral home the other day, I felt like I was you comparing concessions at arenas.
Oh, by the way, MGM Grand, crap concessions,
Terrible.
absolutely terrible, like just unbelievably bad. So you know, just to bear that in mind. Sondra, great idea. She brought loads of vodka miniatures, so I just got to drink them all weekend,
Yeah.
which was great. So
That was, I really wish I would have had more of those on my flight home, to be honest. I only had one left.
Oh no! Well, you weren't to know. You weren't to
No,
know that Frontier
exactly.
was
I
gonna
was
fuck
supposed to
you.
be home at 10:45 in Grand Rapids in the morning on Monday morning. I was supposed to work Monday night. I got home at like 1 p.m. on Tuesday. I was just really ready to be out of those clothes. I did change my shirt in the airport bathroom at one point,
Now, you should mention,
but
though, Frontier did give you some sort of compensation. What did they give you?
yeah, they sent me an email and they were like, oh, by the way, you know, for all of your time and trouble, here's a $100 voucher to be used toward a future flight with Frontier within the next 90 days. Do you think I'm going to be over my PTSD from this experience in 90 days and try to fly that fucking cretinous airline again? No. I don't want to be stranded in who knows where. I did check, like, where I could fly with Frontier and how much it was going to be. They won't even pay for a full flight.
Well, the weird thing is, another reason
Not
why
even one way.
this is the weird thing why again, America does not have it as good as we do. Like, so in, I think it's in all of the EU, but if your flight is over 3 hours, you get a refund.
Canada as well, because I got compensation when I ended up having like a 7-hour layover in Toronto one time, and I didn't know about it. Like, I didn't know it was a thing. So, like, they just emailed me and were like, hey, you get money. And I was like, cool.
So wait a minute, let me find out what the UK is. If a flight you're booked on is delayed or cancelled, you may be tipped compensation. Under EU law, airlines are required to pay compensation to passengers when their flights are delayed or cancelled. You only have the right if it's been you only have the right if it's, if the delay has been like over a certain amount of time. But
See, and I might check on it for the American flight because the whole thing was the American Airlines flight that they booked me on was supposed to be at like 4:45, and then that got delayed to like 5 to 5:15 to 6:45. So like Jason and Andrea and I were like on our way to dinner because we thought I was going to have to get rebooked on a flight at like 1 a.m. And then it turned out like the system fucked up, and then because I think the second connecting flight got canceled, then they switched me back to the 6:45. So I had to make them like turn around, go back to their place, get my bag. They were super late for dinner. I felt awful, and like they couldn't have been nicer about it. But yeah. So then like that was why I had to stay in O'Hare overnight because I spent 9 hours in O'Hare because the one flight got canceled, and so then I had like a super long layover. Cheers to the American Airlines woman at the gate when I was getting on my flight because I decided to carry on my bag because I didn't want to check it again. So I just like ditched my saline and gave my tequila to Jason and Andrea. And like, so I decided to carry on my bag, but like gate checking was completely full because of course it was, because why wouldn't it be? So they were like, well, we want to check your bag through. And I was like, is that going through to Kalamazoo? Because I couldn't fly back into Grand Rapids, of course, because that'd be too easy. I had to fly back into Kalamazoo. And so I was like, well, I guess there's nothing I need in it for the day, whatever, just check it. I'm so done at this point. And she's like, but your flight's not till tomorrow. And I was like, yeah, I'm sleeping in the airport tonight. It's been a day. And she just like, she was fatigued as well. And she goes, You've been really nice. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pink tag your bag. I'm not supposed to, but this way you can at least like just get it right when you get off the plane. You won't have to go back out through baggage claim and go back out through security and everything, which I appreciate because when you travel with a microphone, they always think it's a bomb. So it always just becomes this ordeal.
Yeah, somehow technology has gone so far that a blue snowball mic feels like a bomb.
Same with the Yeti. They have to swab it every time.
Ugh. It's so frustrating.
It's just a whole thing.
It is so frustrating. So, yeah, that's our weekend. Obviously, Sandra's ended much, much worse than mine did. Although, I did find out that today there's still £1,000 worth of refunds I need to do for The Undertaker, so it continues to haunt me every single day, which is
I'm
great.
Just like, I'm glad that I didn't have anything to do on Tuesday, and, like, I made it back for funeral stuff, so at least it could have been worse, I guess.
So Raw and SmackDown this week were atrocious.
They were pish.
Brock Lesnar, God say, I'm all aboard Party Brock. He was the best thing on Raw apart from Bray Wyatt.
Like, Party Brock is pretty fantastic. Like, the only good things about WWE this week were Party Brock with his, you know, boombox Money in the Bank briefcase.
Paul Heyman's air guitar.
Being incredible. Paul Heyman's air guitar. And Bray Wyatt's Firefly Funhouse. Like, the only pop of the night on SmackDown, and, like, I had a bunch of friends who were at SmackDown this week, they barely paid attention to the show, and I can't blame them because it was terrible, but they did pop for the R-Truth segment at the end, you know? And then Umberto Carrillo versus Jack Gallagher, they watched that match and loved it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just, for me, like, I was watching it, like, the electric chair segment on Raw.
Why was it an electric chair? I'm so confused.
Like, It was like basically the reason as to why I try to not do Q&As at shows when I can help it. Like, because fan questions are terrible. Like, there was a question about the Mixed Match Challenge. There was a question about, are you going to win the Universal Championship? Oh my God, they were terrible.
And these people have to be plants, right?
I mean,
like, are
think...
these the questions they're giving plants?
Jesus. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, if they're plants, you've got to think you couldn't come up with better questions. If they're not plants, then that's the intelligence level of the fan base. It's, either way, it's bad.
It's a problem. It's a big problem. Like, I actually forgot that I hadn't watched any of Raw until last night when someone sent me a meme of Brock Lesnar and his boombox. And I was like, oh, shit, I didn't watch any of Raw. I need to watch that before I record Inside the Ropes tomorrow. So I watched the Hulu version. And oh boy, did nothing happen. I mean, Sami Zayn versus Seth Rollins was a good match. I heard there was more Cesaro and Ricochet. What happened with that?
Ricochet won, I think. So now it's like one each.
Okay.
So somebody wins somebody will win the rubber match, I guess.
I mean, I'm all about seeing them wrestle. I may seek out the match, just depending. I didn't have time last night. Yesterday, I started at like 9:30 in the morning, and the only time I had to myself was like when I was taking a shit and when I was driving to work. So it's been a week. But yeah, I mean, Raw's just depressing right now. And the wild card rule is the worst. Like on SmackDown, I don't need to see Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns ever again in my life. Like, I don't care if you add R-Truth and Elias to it. It's still Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns, and it's a match that just, like, I'm getting flashbacks to Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin. You know who else I don't want to see? Dolph fucking Ziggler cutting his, like, weepy, cryy, like, I swear, his standard promo has just gotten louder. Like, that's the only difference, is that I think he's just gotten louder and more desperate. And I think that makes him think that he's more interesting. He is not. It is still the same promo about how he should be in the spotlight, blah, 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 blah. Change your fucking character. Bray Wyatt finally changed his character and Dolph Ziggler still can't.
I feel like we've had the same conversation for ages, but it's like Dolph Ziggler versus Kofi Kingston. I'm already not excited about Kofi Kingston being champion. This does not help. We live
in a
world.
I like Kofi as champion, but like Dolph Ziggler? No.
We live in a world where Kofi Kingston is the world champion and Daniel Bryan is a tag champ. I mean.
Yeah.
What?
Baffling.
So
I mean, I did laugh at Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan just shitting on Tulsa, Oklahoma. That
Why
was kind of
not?
my favorite thing because, like, saying that they, have monuments to big oil and stuff, which they totally do. Like, one of their city monuments is the Golden Driller. And so, of course, everyone is cheering fracking because they live in fucking Tulsa and they're going to be like, yay, Golden Driller, it's our monument. Like, I have it on a shirt. It just made me laugh.
But like the thing with SmackDown is like, I mean, Brock Lesnar has been the highlight of Raw. Sorry to everyone who hates him, but he has been.
He's actually been brilliant. Like, I still think the implications of him being, Mr. Money in the Bank are a problem because then eventually he's going to be champion. But I actually quite liked him finding out, wait, I have a whole year to cash in.
And Heyman's
Because,
like, how do
like,
you not know this? Then
well,
why would you
because
know?
as Kofi and Seth are coming out and like, I demand a decision from Brock Lesnar, I actually said to the television, he has a year. Why are you doing this? Like, why are Kofi Kingston and Seth Rollins putting themselves in front of Brock Lesnar to be cashed in upon? Like, that doesn't make any sense. What even are you doing? And then for Brock to be like, I have a whole year, throw the papers in Paul's face and just leave. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, it was great. The Firefly Funhouse was good, but the rest of the show was just really plodding. On SmackDown, like the Kevin Owens Kofi Kingston thing isn't clicking for me. The Kofi Kingston's Dolph Ziggler thing definitely isn't clicking for me. Yeah,
I'm
it's
still
just.
happy that Bayley is champion and like her match with Lacey Evans wasn't bad, but it almost feels flat already, which isn't good because I'm a
Everything
big
feels flat
Bayley
right now.
fan. Everything feels flat and it's except for R-Truth. Like that was the thing on SmackDown that I cared the most about. Like I got real mad when Elias pinned R-Truth for the championship, and then I got even angrier when fucking Shane McMahon was like, "Oh, I'm gonna suspend the 24/7 rule during this match because of course I will because I'm Shane McMahon and I just change the rules all the time." Fuck off.
I did think that R-Truth teaming with Reigns was a pretty good idea, and
Yeah, that's fine.
I like the idea that R-Truth got in the main event with him, and I thought the story they did with Elias winning the 24/7 title and then Truth winning it back right after his match, I thought it was a pretty fun story. So I'll give them that,
That
but.
was a fun story. I don't like the idea that Shane McMahon suspended the rules for the match. Like, I understand that that made the pop a little bit bigger when R-Truth won it back from Elias, but it's just, I don't like that a week after its inception, Shane's like, oh, I can just change the rules. Like, you know how that kind of stuff just sticks in my craw,
It does
especially when
bother
it's Shane.
me.
But I mean, that was a fun story, R-Truth losing the title and then gaining it back. And I like the fact that the 24/7 championship is allowing them to interrupt segments that you wouldn't normally think. Like, for them to all scramble after the Brock Lesnar thing on Raw was really cool. It makes it feel like more of a fully formed world. And Drake Maverick putting up posters, and it actually continued on 205 Live as well. Like he saw R-Truth and like ran after him on 205 Live. So it's combining all the shows in a way that makes sense as opposed to just wild card rule.
Next week on Raw and SmackDown, they've announced that Undertaker will be on Raw, Goldberg will be on SmackDown, which I guess didn't pop a rating, but it's like, so the Goldberg Undertaker match is for somebody like me, right? Old school fan, has watched it for years. It is baffling to me that we've not had, or we're not gonna have, one segment where they're in the same ring together. Like,
That is
it's
weird.
easy. Like, Undertaker can be the guy that, was always in WWE. Goldberg can be the guy that, he came back, he was able to beat Brock Lesnar, the thing Undertaker couldn't do. And then you've got a story that's an
Actually,
easy
that's a
story.
great story.
Easy. And then
They
you've got the
haven't told it, but that's a
No.
great story.
Because if you leave it with being, Goldberg could do the one thing Undertaker couldn't do, then Undertaker seems vulnerable. Then you're telling a story, yada yada yada. But they're not even
Who do
deciding
you
to do
want
that.
to win that match?
It depends. I mean, if Undertaker's continuing to wrestle, I guess he wins it. If go But the thing is, I can't imagine that Goldberg is going to be able to get Undertaker up for a jackhammer. Maybe he is.
Yeah.
I mean, well, because remember, like 2015, people were like, "Well, Undertaker's not going to take all those German suplexes from Brock," and then he did.
And then he did.
So, I don't know. I don't really think it matters who wins, which is a good thing
He could
because
win with a spear, couldn't he?
he could. He could. I think the good thing about the match is because it doesn't really like, some matches people go into going, this person has to win for it to be good. Because that's not really there, it's a bit more relaxing. And look, it is a dream match for a lot of people. I just wish that we'd got a segment or two building up. And look, the amount of
And that it was
money.
also 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, but also, they've been paid so much money to do it. I don't think they would object to coming in doing two segments. Like,
Right.
so, yeah, just. Bit of a wasted opportunity, but that's the story of this year. What
And I
else?
think part of my disinterest with WWE also is that they're building toward a pay-per-view that I'm not going to watch. So it's, and the thing is they want to like keep it pretty low key. Like, they're building towards Super Showdown, but they don't really want to talk that much about Super Showdown. So it's just kind of like, all right, we're going to do a thing, but don't pay attention to where it is or why we're not having any women build to it.
Yep. And also, Sami Zayn's not allowed to go because of his ethnicity.
Yep.
Or race. Kevin Owens is not going at a protest for his friend.
Daniel Bryan has said that he didn't go before.
So he's not going. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Wasn't Aleister Black is not going either, right? Wasn't it something about his tattoos?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the religious iconography?
I guess. I mean, it's just a joke at this point, you know? I get that people don't watch it. The main thing for me is, like, it's an excuse to have people around on a Friday evening to watch a show at, like, 7 p.m., which is fun. But,
A couple of my friends in Metropolis were like, yeah, we should get together and have a watch party. I was like, I think I have other things to do on Friday afternoon. I'll be busy. I think I have a photo shoot or something. It's fine.
But I mean, I understand why people don't watch it. We've had this conversation before, but I'm curious about maybe like 2 years from now, how it goes down, because you get AEW who are doing this stuff like the sensory inclusive stuff,
mm-hmm.
And having all these different types of people on the shows, gay people, trans people, all that kind of stuff. And then you've got WWE who, on one hand, do a lot of good stuff, Make-A-Wish and all that kind of stuff, but then they also go to Saudi Arabia. It just feels a bit yucky, you know?
Well, and it is interesting comparing AEW and WWE and just the perception of those companies, because if you look at WWE, it's like, you know, they work with Coleman, who's not really my favorite organization. So even some of their charitable work is like kind of tainted in a lot of ways. I mean, their Make-A-Wish stuff is fantastic, and Connor's Cure, and like a lot of the stuff they do is great. I'm not trying to paint them as like the evil villain, but they do come across as the evil villain in a lot of ways. And so for AEW to make a big point of being, you know, sensory inclusive and working with Culture City, and like even what Cody Rhodes said in the press interview, right? Like when I think Mark Henry asked him about race and diversity, and he was talking about, you know, how one time he told Brandy, "I don't see color," and she said, "Then you don't see my experience." Like that got picked up on Twitter to the point where AOC actually like quote tweeted and responded and said, "This is very important to the national discourse on race." Like that's huge. That's big. That's mainstream media attention that AEW is getting in a very positive light. So even though, like, they are both owned by billion-dollar corporations. Like, make no mistake, AEW is not an independent wrestling promotion. It is not, it's not the little guy as much as they say it is, but that's the narrative, and they've been able to keep that up. It's just, it's fascinating to watch the dynamic there.
Well, also because, I mean, I don't know enough, but I assume if you are part, you know, Tony Khan is the, I don't know if he exactly himself is a billionaire, if he's a millionaire with a billionaire dad, but I know that the Khan family have a lot of money. And look, I don't know who they have ties to. They could mm-hmm. have ties to Saudi Arabia, they could have ties to whatever, but they're being clever enough if they do to, look, everybody's in bed with someone bad in some way, shape or form. You can, the people who aren't are the people who just like are off the grid and just like,
yeah.
And because, you know, it's a hole to go down because then you got your phone, who makes your phone, who makes your clothes, da 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 da. But the other thing I was going to say for AEW, which is a different part of the conversation, but something that I think is valid, is that I know Jim Cornette has done a review of Double or Nothing on his podcast, and
oh no,
I'm quite excited to check it out because he apparently does say a lot of good things about it. But he didn't like the Battle Royal, which I expected he was not going to like, but he liked a lot of the show, and he talks about different stuff, and you know, he said something that I'm going to listen to, but he said something that I thought I never really thought about before, but I do know what he means. He said that like, he thinks Kenny Omega, now he doesn't like Kenny Omega, so obviously this is a biased thing on his part, but he talks a little bit about like how Kenny Omega sometimes might come across a bit of an artsy-fartsy person about wrestling. And I do mm-hmm. see that sometimes, and I can understand why that, it doesn't really put me off him, but I can understand why it would put some people off. So if you're someone
who, I'm an artsy-fartsy person, so I enjoy that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think if you're someone who enjoyed the show, but
one of my favorite wrestlers is called Still Life with Apricots and Pears, and is a sentient work of art, so it's one of those things.
I don't know how to respond to that. But the point I was going to make is, like, I know AEW and Double or Nothing be getting a lot of love, but if you were someone who enjoyed it but thought it had some things to criticise, then the Cornette podcast is probably a good idea, because I think it's probably the only one out there right now that's You know, Finn, but Finn and I had, you know, we had some kind of discussions about stuff that we didn't think was the best. So there's that too. I think that's, so if you, so it may be worth checking that out. I've heard it's pretty good. But it's funny because I think if you, if, I mean, on the surface, Cornette should hate it, but then I'm sure he loved the Cody and Dustin match. I think he did. And he liked some other people on it. So we'll see. Let's talk about the Jon Moxley podcast.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I did listen to it. It's rare times that I will like seek out a Talk Is Jericho podcast. But yeah, I thought it was very interesting.
Quiet shade.
I'm sorry. His plugs drive me insane. I can't do it. Like, one of my favorite tweets, did you see the one where it was like, you know, yeah, I was so like upset with working that I had depression. You know what gives me depression? Not getting a good steak. And that's why Omaha Steaks. Like, that's the thing. I understand that podcasts have to do ad reads. Like, we don't have to do them yet. The day will probably come. But there's no shame in just being like, we're going to take a break for an ad. And then you do the ad. And then you go back to the show. You don't have to pretend like you're continuing the conversation. Like, you're telling Jon Moxley all about Omaha Steaks.
My favorite part is like when
Blue Chew.
Because the audio clearly changes.
No, the audio changes. That's what drives me the most insane about it. At least make the audio match.
Because like Sondra and I have this different thing where Sondra will sometimes say, all right, you know, this didn't sound great. And I'll go in and I'll be like, I don't hear the difference. So mm-hmm. I don't know if Sondra has like sixth sense hearing that I don't have.
But I
think it's obvious. So if I think it's obvious, it must drive you insane.
I hate it so much. It drives me fucking nuts.
But my favorite part is like, say you'll be talking, right? And it'll be like, you know, say I'm interviewing Sondra, and Sondra will be like, you know, yeah, my aunt died, and it's just kind of trying to pick up the pieces. Yeah, Sondra, I totally feel you there. When I usually pick up the pieces after I've had a Wendy's, and I go to Wendy's on a Tuesday, and then he just does the whole plug as if he's telling that to the person. It's so good.
Which makes it seem even more like condescending and whatnot. It's just, oh, it's ridiculous. But no, like I did listen to the Jon Moxley podcast because everyone was saying it was so earth shattering and it was so groundbreaking. And it was like the biggest thing since the Punk Cabana one. And I don't think there was nearly as much shade as the Punk Cabana one. Jon Moxley doesn't seem as angry as CM Punk did about the whole experience. I mean, Jon Moxley also doesn't want to completely like burn bridges with WWE. I thought like he did start out and say like, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for everything they did. It's just the working environment there was terrible, right? And as I was listening to it, I don't think there was anything super groundbreaking that he said. It was more just like confirming what we kind of know goes on. Does that make sense? Like, I wasn't surprised by anything he said.
I mean, I
wasn't shocked.
I saw a lot of people saying, well, now we just, this confirms what we knew. Well, no, this confirms the rumors.
Yes.
Because none of us knew what was going on. We'd heard stuff. So it was good to have it confirmed that it is actually, I think it is the most important interview / podcast since the Punk one. I was thinking about it. I don't think there is one since in between that I would go, that's more important to listen to. And I think that the part that Moxley wasn't in any way like really angry, he was just explaining where he came from. That made it more powerful because the Punk one was very sort of like, you could tell how angry he was and he just like couldn't wait to shit on everybody. Whereas Ambrose was like, or Moxley, it's really hard to not call him Ambrose now. With Moxley,
the weird thing for me is like I don't even think of him as Dean. I think because I didn't like Dean Ambrose, and that was one of the things that the podcast confirmed, was like a lot of the Dean Ambrose stuff that I hated, like how David McCutcheon and I are always like, he's the dumbest human ever. Like him, the dude, he didn't want to do all that shit. He didn't want to look like an idiot. He didn't want to be beaten by a hologram or like television not being unplugged or like wheel a mustard cart or, you know, all that stuff he didn't want to do, but that was what he was handed and that's what they wanted him to do, and he just kind of tried to make it work. And I feel for the guy because I hated Dean Ambrose as a character, and apparently he did too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he said everything that, I mean, the good thing is that the Roman Reigns leukemia stuff was something that a lot of people had a problem with, and the fact that he had such a problem with it as well kind of is good that everyone can kind of be happy with him again, because the idea that he wanted to do that was quite a hard pill to swallow. But I think it's a must listen. I think you need to check it out if you follow WWE and follow North American Wrestling. It's a really important podcast to listen to because you kind of get a feel of what the process is in WWE and how they do things. And do you think there's going to be any fallout of it? Do you think there's going to be any big kind of are WWE going to do anything in response to it, or do you think it just kind of goes under the rug?
I don't think they're going to do anything, because why would they? Like, I mean, people have spoken out about that. I think the only thing that's more interesting, like, I don't think WWE has to change anything because of it, right? Like, they can continue business as usual. They can continue the micromanaging, the overproducing, the everything, because that's what works for them and that's what they know. And so I don't envision that that's going to change at all. Like, why would it? This is the way that they do business. But what I think is interesting is the people who are so sympathetic toward Jon Moxley and so sympathetic towards a lot of other people and think that Sasha Banks is just being a whiny brat. And I think it makes me feel a lot more sympathetic for Sasha as well. I mean, obviously she is under contract still. She can't speak out. She can't say anything. She can't, you know, she's in a really tough spot right now. And I don't know her personally yet. Like, I don't. So I can't say whether, you know, she's having too much of a tantrum or not, but like, it's someone being super unhappy in their job to the point where they're physically and mentally exhausted all the time. I've been there. I've been in jobs like that. And even though I was making more money at the time and it was, you know, I had benefits, I actually had health insurance back then, like, it wasn't worth it because it was killing me. And so it's one of those situations where it seems like there's an environment in WWE right now that everyone's just exhausted and done with that place. And
do you think reason that people feel more annoyed towards Sasha Banks is that, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, I'm just trying to figure it out, but like, do you think it's because Ambrose at the time did just kind of shut up and do it and saw his contract out, but because she's, and we don't know why, so, you know, we're not going to throw shade on him, but she decided to walk away during her contract, which, you know, on the surface I guess would seem unprofessional, but we don't know the details of it. But yeah, and she's been very vocal on social media. She's been like, he didn't do any of that. He just kind of did his job, to maybe to a fault in some ways, because he ended up, like, you know, doing that leukemia speech which he didn't want to do.
Well, he said he did take out one line that he wouldn't even say on air because it was so bad.
And the one he did say was pretty bad, so I don't even know what the other one's going to be. So, yeah, I mean, maybe that's it. I mean, there is obviously the...
I mean, I guess so, but it seemed like when Adrian Neville did the same thing, people were behind him. So it's concerning that, you know, a woman of color is being treated this, like, a certain way, and then, you know, when dudes do it, it's completely different. People are like, oh, well, she could have a great place in the women's division. The women's division needs her because it's so thin. And it's like, yeah, the women's division is really thin. That might be part of her problem. Who knows? But
it's part of my problem.
Yeah, it's part of WWE's problem. But I don't know. I think it was interesting to listen to, for sure. And it made me have a lot of respect for Jon Moxley as a dude, for, like, for continuing to do it, even though he didn't want to do it. I think because he saw an end in sight. Like, I don't know when Sasha's contract is up. I don't know when Neville's contract was going to be up. Obviously, I think Punk had a while on his deal when he walked out. I think Jon Moxley saw that there was an end in sight. He was like, it's only 8 months. I can do this. My wife still works there. I thought it was really sweet the way he talked about Renee. Like, he's like, if nothing else, WWE gave me my wife and I love her and she's my best friend. And I think that's awesome. Like, that's really cool. And, you know, for him to be like, hey, if all this goes sideways or doesn't work out, we'll just pack up our stuff, go in an RV and go live, you know. And I feel like he would be happy doing that. He seems like a very free spirit. And,
well, you know, I want to kind of address one of the things that you said there, which I think is important, because, like, part of the reason I don't think in terms of, like, and there are people who do this, unfortunately. I try to not think about it, but there are people who probably bash Sasha Banks because she is a woman of color or whatever. I don't think like that, which is why it's difficult for me. Like, I just think of it on the basis of, I don't care what color you are or what orientation you are, but that's not, it's not to say that doesn't exist. It's just that's not how I see it. So, like, when I'm, for me anyway, the only reason I've kind of been more, pondered more Sasha Banks' situation is because she's been more vocal than most other people. You know, like, Neville did just leave. Never posted anything, he just left. Ambrose saw his thing out. She's been very vocal, which to me, I'm more curious about what's going on. And I'm not saying that she is in the wrong, you know, or that she's in the right. I don't know. So, but I wanted to say one thing that I've... So, like, because something like me may think, well, you know, I'm not a racist person, so I wouldn't think of something like that. But I remember, like, WrestleMania 27 was in Atlanta, and I went to that show, and I went to a Toys R Us in Atlanta, which was like 15 miles outside of the city to see if they had wrestling figures, because, you know, I'm cool. And
of course.
And they didn't have any, but I was walking to this like rural Georgia store, and I felt quite uncomfortable, I didn't really understand why. And there was a lot of African Americans in the store. There was only African Americans in the store. And I felt a little bit uncomfortable. And I left the shop and I was like, oh my God, am I a racist? Like, am I what? But I realized what it was. I'd never in my life at that point ever been in a scenario where I was the only white person. I'd never been in that scenario. So I recognized what it was. It was never me being like, oh my God, these people. You know, it was nothing like that. It was just more, I'd never been on that end of it. And that was the first time I was kind of like, maybe that's how some African-Americans feel sometimes when they're in a situation like that. Where
well, and I think taking the time to like acknowledge that you felt that way and examine why is good. Like, I think that that's a good and healthy response to it, right? Instead of just being like, well, I'm not racist. It doesn't matter. Like, I think it's good that you take the time to, you know, think about those things.
So I guess, yeah, the reason I'm saying that is because I don't want people who are maybe like of color or whatever who are thinking, well, Kenny's just disregarding that because he's a white guy that doesn't see it. It's just because I try to like keep myself away from stuff like that, which whether that's right or wrong, that's kind of how I handle it. But apparently, it was in the Observer this week, Sasha and Vince had a meeting last week and it's looking like she is going to be back. I mean, okay. For me, if she can, I don't know if she can, I don't know what's going on with her, but she should come back and see out her dates, see out her contract, if she can.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just going to be, she can leave with her head held high. Do you know what I mean? They can't bash her, they can't do anything to her because she finished. Because I think Matt Hardy had written that tweet, which I think I said on the show, about, he said in 2019 he feels like fans see the talent and see when they're being misused and will see that in the future.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, I mean, look at someone like Sean Spears when he came out in the Battle Royal at Double or Nothing and got that incredible response, right? Like, he wasn't on WWE TV for a long time. It would be easy to forget him in a way because also, he just wasn't used. But, like, people see him and they connected to him. And, like, oh my gosh, Beyond is doing Sean Spears versus Orange Cassidy next week and I'm so excited. But that's just an aside.
Well, I mean, but, you know, you've been a big fan of Ty Dillinger. I really kind of lost interest in him. And then he came out as... And I think I even turned to you and I was like, it's Ty! Like, why was I shouting that? Like, I'm not... You're the big fan of his and I'm shouting at you about it. Which, you know, says that I think people are recognising that. And I think that... I don't know if he will do this and maybe WWE will try and do something to stop it. But, you know, we talked on Yellow Ropes Forever about Candice LeRae, how they are potentially starting to give her a push because she's got a year left in her deal. You know, she had a very successful teaming with Joey Ryan and, you know, maybe that's something that she should revisit because they were a very popular duo and, you know, I think that they... I mean, they're basically like the most... Am I right in saying they're the most famous intergender team? Were they?
Yeah, okay. I would say, like, probably, yeah.
So, you know, that's something to bear in mind. But what was my point there? Yeah, no, because I hope that next year... Matt Hardy leaves and goes to AEW because he's still got the broken thing. He owns it, not WWE. And to me, like, broken Matt Hardy could be on your show every week. He doesn't need to wrestle all the time and he would be one of the best parts of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there will come a time soon where AEW are going to start getting picky about who they pick to go over. And like Sean Spears, I mean, he was friends with Cody. He's a talented guy. He got out at the right time because there is going to come a time where they're not going to take everybody. You know, they're not going to take all the people that are there. So is there anything else you want to talk about this week as we kind of wind down?
I mean, I think that we should talk about Firefly Funhouse just briefly because it was awesome. And it also kind of illustrated a point to me when, you know, when Abby the Witch is, you know, saying like, you know, oh, you're a sicko. And Bray's like, I'm not a sicko. Because, you know, and he has this, like, scary face on a paper plate. And it keeps going back and forth between light and dark. And it's just this, I don't know, brilliant juxtaposition. But there was a line that Abby said, you know, after Bray was the doctor. And she goes, why won't you let me rest? And I, like... In my head, like, that just kind of made me think, like, okay, obviously, like, Abby the Witch in previous editions of Firefly Funhouse has wanted to sleep, right? Like, waking up Abby the Witch is not a good idea. Like, when Rambling Rabbit woke up Abby the Witch, that was bad because she was going to be angry and all this kind of stuff. But it's also, like, Abby the Witch is obviously very much like Sister Abigail, right? Sister Abigail, who is deceased, whose body got stolen by Eric Rowan, and like he's just dredging up the memory of Sister Abigail and won't let it rest. And there was just all this like rich backstory history in my head that was going on. And in that moment, I was like, why does a puppet on a children's show parody have more character development than like most of the WWE roster? it's kind of sad in a way, but it's still like, it's awesome that this Firefly Funhouse show has been that effective for me. Like, I am so into it every single time. And I think Bray Wyatt's doing incredible work. And for everyone who keeps asking us, who do you want Bray Wyatt's next feud to be? Do you want him to face Aleister Black? Do you want him to face, you know, whoever? I don't really want to see him have a feud. Like, we, you and I have talked about this before. It's not a new conversation, but like, I just want these to continue for as long as they're gathering steam.
Well, because look at one of the most successful wrestling angles of all time. Sting against the NWO. Mm-hmm. A year of coming through the rafters, doing one thing, ripping up a bit of paper to get a pop. All that kind of stuff. You do, like, there's enough workers and people on the roster. You don't need him to wrestle every week. So if he's mm-hmm. doing something that's working, like, keep it working. And like, you can have him in the arena, but like, I would have him, you know, not the same thing, but like almost like Batman. You know, there's the symbol, there's a lot of things you can do that could, you know, signal that he's going to show up or whatever. Because one of the problems is if he's got all these kind of puppets and stuff, it's hard to do that in a live arena.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get around that? So a lot of people don't have faith in WWE right now, so that's the problem, is that a lot of people aren't excited about where it's going to go because they're worried about it, which is valid. But he's doing great work, and I think the mask is so cool, it's unreal.
And I love the fact that he put, like, he drew the scary face just on a paper plate to hold up in front of him, because it's like everything is kind of a parody of something else, right, on the show. And then, you know, when Abby says, you know, like, I don't want to be stuck in limbo, because she's like between life and death, right? She's between awake and asleep. And like, that's really powerful. And then he, of course, takes that and just has a limbo. I mean, granted, like, he wouldn't have won the limbo because his hands were on the ground and the rules of the limbo are like your hands can't touch the ground. But whatever, he did a spider walk under a limbo bar with two children with like staring stone cold faces, like staring straight ahead. So the kids are like, these are the culty kids from before. And for him to just be like, I can light the way, all you have to do is let me in. Like, it's creepy. It gives me chills. I love it. It's so, so good.
So we'll see where it goes. The last two things I very quickly wanted to talk to you about were one of them, which, so I was reading The Observer this morning, and I was also talking to somebody else who may or may not be a journalist who works for Inside the Ropes, but who was saying, you know, that they don't, that particular person does not subscribe to the Observer newsletter and never will again, because he feels like the bias towards certain people that Meltzer likes is too much. And I think there is an element of that. You know, there is an element of you can tell what he likes over what he yeah. doesn't like. But if you read between that kind of stuff, some of the stuff that he did say that was pretty interesting was the reach that AEW had during the weekend. Like, I think it was, I'm trying to find the exact numbers, like, AEW was the second most searched term on Saturday night on Google, topping 220,000 hits, trailing only the Toronto Raptors. NXT's only cracked the top 20 once, hitting 50,000 for the most recent takeover in Brooklyn. And it then, when it came to the next day, the Sunday, it more than quadrupled the Money in the Bank interest and was six times greater than UFC 237. So all that interest with no TV, it was kind of, it means that this could be a real thing. Like, this could be a real big number when they go on TV, because there's a lot of people disenfranchised. There's a lot of people who are not loving what WWE are putting out. So they've got some good momentum. But I wanted to ask you, did you hear about Triple H being asked about the Cody sledgehammer throne thing?
No, I didn't.
So he was asked about it on the conference call this week, and he kind of fobbed it off and said, you know, that, you know, he doesn't concentrate. He concentrate what's his, what, because the question was, you know, you did the thing at the Hall of Fame with Billy Gunn and DX and whatever, and now Cody's done this. And he said that the Billy Gunn thing was kind of poking fun at the elephant in the room, and that was DX being DX, but he doesn't really worry about other things. Now, Triple H has made a big kind of, big attempt over the last couple of years to become very friendly with media. He does these conference calls. He's, you know, I've seen him at things where he says hi to media journalists by name, or, you know, like, if you remember, I remember one time he said hi to me, like, he remembered me or whatever. Like, he's very mm-hmm. good at making you feel familiar with him. What do you think is going to happen, or what would you like to see happen when they get to TV in the fall in terms of taking shots? Should they keep taking shots? Should WWE take shots back at them? Should WWE ignore them? Like, this is essentially going to be your version of the Monday Night Wars. So what would you like to see?
I honestly, I don't really have a preference. Like the shots that they took during Double or Nothing didn't bother me. I think they put some people off. I don't think anything went overboard. I mean, the throne with the sledgehammer was pretty obvious, right? Like that was a pretty obvious dig. But I don't know. I kind of like it. I mean, like the Young Bucks were saying at the press conference that like, or at the media thing afterwards, whatever. Like that's their sense of humor, is to make those kind of jokes and make those kind of digs. And I think that's fun. I honestly think that's fun. I mean, WWE this week, Sami Zayn did say AEW on WWE television and everyone went crazy and it was scripted and it wasn't scripted. And who knows if it was scripted or not. Vince is furious. Vince wrote it in the script. Who knows what happened, right? But it gets people talking and it creates buzz. Like I don't want it to ever start to feel like, from clips that I've seen of WCW and WWE, I mean, we've seen it on Retro Raw. Like, they're taking such obvious digs a lot of the times at WCW, calling people dinosaurs and saying that, you know, oh, like, we're not the company where these old men wrestle. We have young people who can actually do things. And I think it gets too heavy-handed sometimes in the 90s from what I've seen. And I've only seen mostly the WWF side of it. Like, I know that Eric Bischoff went in, you know, like challenged Vince McMahon to a fight or whatever. And, you know,
which
like
is
that's
funny because
kind of...
Bischoff said during an interview with him, which, by the way, guys, 180,000 hits on YouTube. So go check that
really?
Out.
Really? But... I mean, it was a great interview. I thought he was really interesting.
And, you know, I asked him, what was your favorite thing during the Monday Night Wars? And it was the him challenging Vince to a fight. And, like, I can only say when I was 13, this is the coolest thing, I think, because, like, there's so many fans who are like 10, 11, 12 years old, and it's like, nothing for me will ever replicate that time period of when you were able to watch the two brands and sometimes one would take shots at the other and whatever. It was fun, and now there's a new generation of fans that might get that, and that's really cool for them. And cool for you, like you're going to get to finally have some version of that in your life.
Yeah, because I never have before, and this feels different. This feels new. Like this, like when we were talking to Awesome Kong on the Sunday, that's something she said. She was like, there's just this kinetic energy because we haven't had any sort of feeling like this in a very long time. And I think because the last time this happened, right, the last time there was some sort of war between two big companies, that was before the age of social media. So it really feels like it's an entirely new frontier in a way. Oh my gosh, I said the word frontier and now I'm sad again. But
you didn't like, the thing is, when I talked to Bischoff and he mentioned that the challenge of Vince McMahon, I remember when me and Jamie would watch it as a kid. Like when Eric Bischoff challenged Vince McMahon on TV, it was huge because it was like that wasn't even like a veiled thing. This was, I am challenging Vince McMahon on pay per view. Mm-hmm. They had a door with Vince McMahon's name on the dressing room door, and like I was 13, so in my head I'm going, will he turn up? Like,
right.
Like because you just don't know. And it was this kind of iconic angle, and you can only imagine how angry Vince McMahon must have been that they were making pay per view buys off of his name.
Oh, I'm sure he was furious.
And if none of you have seen it, right, just go on the network and go to Slamboree 98 and just go to that segment, because Bischoff basically gets in the ring, they try and announce Vince, then they do a count and announce Bischoff as the winner by forfeit. It's so good. So if stuff like that comes up, it'd be pretty fun. And like, you know, somebody might show up out of the blue. I mean, that we don't think about. Awesome Kong showed up at Double or Nothing that none of us saw coming. And those, because I mean, the last few years it has been like there's an ROH or there's an Impact or whatever, but like they weren't really competition. They were just like,
well, and I feel like one of the different things about now, and I don't know how prevalent this would have been like in WWF, WCW stuff, but it seems like more now, especially with all of the free agents that are also around and also have presences on social media and in people's consciousness, right? Like the people who aren't signed to AEW and aren't signed to WWE, there are so many independent wrestlers that like if they show up either place without warning or without announcement and no one knows that they're signed, or maybe they're not signed, maybe they just show up, right? That adds another element of excitement. Like, I'm trying to think of an example.
Well, you know, there's the thing about the Battle Royal, for example. Like, I know that when I saw one of the kind of reviews of Cornette podcast, that he hated the Orange Cassidy character, which is fine. Like, you know, he's not for everybody. I thought he was pretty funny. I don't know how far I would want to see him go, because I've not seen the character enough to know if it works for me or not and how far it would work for me. But the thing that AEW did do in that one show, and look, it's one show, we can't judge it as if it's like going to be what they're like all the time, but like they did bring a lot of people in. Like, I think this might be controversial, you know, the guy was Dylan Thomas. The guy who has the leg amputation.
Oh, right.
I don't know if I'd want to see him as a regular TV guy because I don't know if I'd buy it in some ways. Like I feel like it would just be for me anyway. No disrespect to him, I think it's great what he's doing, but like it would almost feel like, to me in matches it's too cooperative, you know, because you have to get around a lot of stuff that he wouldn't be able to do. But what they are doing is they're throwing a ton of different shit at the wall so that everybody is getting something, you know? Like the biggest thing that connected me was Cody and Dustin. The biggest thing for you that connected was
I mean, like Cody and Dustin was the biggest thing, but Awesome Kong showing up was the thing that made me jump up and down and like scream and cry.
yeah, so there's that. Like I know like the Young Bucks and Lucha Brothers match, I could have done without maybe 5 minutes of it, but like I know that that was a great version of what they do. So
And for some people, that was their match of the night because
yeah.
that's what connects to them, and that's what makes wrestling great, is that it's a variety show and there is something for everyone.
Whereas WWE
And
has been the last few years kind of like everybody's a bit samey in regards to how they wrestle. So yeah, it's gonna be pretty interesting. So obviously AEW have got, I think they've got a streaming show, the Fighter Fest one in June 29th, and then they've got the Fight for the Fallen on July 13th. Do you see that it's been announced that Jericho and Hangman Page for the title will be All Out
Is it
in
okay?
September? Or yeah, no, August 31st. August 31st. So,
Whatever the date is, I'm excited.
Mick Foley's been announced for StarCast 3 in Chicago, so that'll be cool. Will we be in Chicago? I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe.
If Son well, Sondra wouldn't have to fly that time, so that's
That's the
good.
thing. Honestly, it's such a short drive for me. It's only 3.5 hours to get there. Like, why would I not go?
There you go. So we'll see what happens. Sondra, any plugs for us as we leave and ride off into the figurative sunset?
Yes, you can check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes. Check out our YouTube channel for interviews, youtube.com/insidetheropes. Follow us on Twitter, Sondra Ruth RW, KennyMC1985 at @inside_theropes. And I think that's all the plugs for now.
That is the plugs. Thanks everybody for your support. A couple of people have messaged me saying, "Is everything okay with Patreon? Because you've been plugging it pretty hard." And truth be told, we have seen a drop in numbers, and I think a lot of that's got to do with the disinterest in some of the products and stuff. And it's not anything alarming, but we just want to put it out there in the consciousness. So if you know, there's thousands of you that listen to this every week. So if you, I know some people say, "Oh, I'm not going to sign up because I don't listen to any of it." But if you want to sign up just to support us, you know, even
Like,
if you.
even if you just give us like $1 or $2 a month, if enough of you do that, that adds up. Like, that means a lot to us. So we
Yeah,
appreciate it.
because that's how, you
Any
know,
amount that you can give.
Patreon is how we pay the staff and pay the bills, so it's an important thing
Because we
for us.
don't pretend to continue our conversation and then go into an ad for steaks or Blue Chew or MeUndies or
So
whatever.
don't
Like,
make us
that
have to
is.
do that, ladies and gentlemen, because we are not above doing Bluetooth ads at all. I mean, so
I don't know how much I have to contribute to the Blue Chew conversation, but
well, you could be like, "Hey, Sondra, Mr. Sondra used Bluetooth. What was that experience like?" And we could be like,
I can be like,
"Well,
it was fantastic.
I felt like I was experiencing another frontier."
Oh no, now I'm just having traumatic stress.
So from the PTSD of Frontier Airlines, fuck you. Thank you, Virgin Atlantic, for being so kind to me. Yeah, so we'll be back.
A Tale of Two Airlines.
Tale of Two Airlines. Go to Patreon, check out our Over the Edge review, where we felt it was important to review the show, because I know a lot of people haven't. We're going to do Roz Owen on Sunday, where we are going to review that show, and then probably Monday we'll catch up with the May 31st Retro Raw, and then we'll be all caught up again.
We'll do Takeover on Sunday as well.
Yes, Takeover on Sunday, so we are going to be podcasting out our nut.
So much podcasting, but it's fun.
It's fun. So I'm away to see my mum. My mum's just started watching Gavin and Stacey, so now that's our new marathon that we're doing.
Oh, she started watching it. Yay, how does she like it so far?
She really likes it. She likes Nessa a lot.
Of course.
My mum's also into RuPaul's Drag Race. She was like, "Why can we not just watch the final when I get to your house?" I said, "Mum, I'm watching it at a party tonight. You can just pretend you've not watched it." I was like, "They'll know.
Yeah, they'll know.
I can't lie that way. I can lie about
You
a lot
have
of
to
things."
text me as soon as you start the finale. Like, I need your thoughts.
Okay, that's fine. Well, I've told Steve Gunn as well, because he was like, "I'm going to watch it when I get it at 4." And I was like, "Why don't you wait? And then when I'm watching it, I'll tell you when we're starting it." So I'm very excited. I've like went to, because what was the thing I got spoiled? It was the last or two episodes ago of RuPaul's Drag Race. I got it spoiled by Rebby fucking Hardy.
Stay off social media.
Yeah, but I thought it was a safe space to just go and wrestle on, and she just wrote like somebody had been eliminated. But Today, I've not gone on my personal Facebook. I've only went into DMs because I know that nobody would DM me any results.
Right.
I have not gone on to my own personal Twitter. I've only gone on to the Inside the Ropes one to reply to DMs. And I've stayed off Instagram completely. So it is now 4:37 p.m. on Friday, and I'm going to this party at 7, and I'm only going to watch Gavin and Stacey and try and stay off my phone. So I'm hopeful that I can get by, because this is the first... Nobody cares about this, but I'm just telling you anyway. This is the first RuPaul's Drag Race where I've actually watched the finale in real time. Because every other one I've watched has been, it's been already done. So...
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And it was really exciting. And so I'm keeping my voice very even so that you don't get any sort of indication my level of excitement.
Sandra knows who was... I don't even know what the lip sync songs are. I'm very excited. So, yeah.
I am interested to hear your thoughts when you get there. We should start a group chat for Drag Race.
I hate all of this right now because I'm out of the loop and I don't like it. So, yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Who's playing us out? What song? Do you know who we should play?
Who?
We should play Judas by Fozzy because he is brilliant. He did main event Double or Nothing. He did get his a great wrestling interview. So we should probably play his theme tune.
Yeah, we probably should. Because I don't think John Moxley has a theme tune yet, does he?
No. So what was the name of the airline again that we don't fly?
Frontier.
And you don't like Frontier, do you?
No.
See, when I don't like an airline, what I like to do is listen to Judas by Fozzy. You can get it on iTunes and Google Play. here's Chris Jericho and his band singing Fozzy. It's singing Judas. Their name is Fozzy. We'll be back on Sunday. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Personified, and I will track you down and sell.